Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Guys, we're here with the Hollywood Life podcast, and we are so excited today. We have got a very special and a very musical guest here with us in the podcast studio. So welcome, Chris Daughtry of Daughtry.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming and joining Allie and I. Allie, our on-air anchor and writer, and Nick, of course, our silent producer. So, welcome to New York City.
Thank you.
You played a concert last night at the famed Beacon Hall Theater. And you have got a fabulous new album out called Cage to Rattle. And I love the singles.
Thank you.
Deep End and Backbone.
Thank you very much.
She's been listening to them.
I know. The whole office has been listening to them.
Have you heard the rest of the record?
I have not sampled too much of the rest of the record, but you can tell us all about it.
Oh, no. I was just interested if you had any other personal favorites.
Well, I have to say, I've had Deep End on repeat.
Okay.
In fact, it's kind of some of my seatmates have gotten kind of...
A little annoyed with me here in the
Hollywood Life newsroom.
She plays it for the masses.
Yeah.
Is that
morning walk-in music every time someone...
Tell us about
hearing me over and over to you.
Well, what was it inspired by, Deep End? I mean, it sounds like a relationship.
Yeah, you know what? That song came in a little late in the game when we were making the record. It's actually one of the songs on the record that I didn't really... it was kind of written ahead of time. It was brought to me from the label, and they were like, hey, what do you think of this song? And at first, I didn't like it at all.
Really? Why not?
Maybe because of the way it was presented and the fact that I'd been working on this record for almost 2 years. And I'm like, why are you bringing me this song when I've got all of these? But at the same time, I was open to listening to it and seeing if I found any kind of connection to it. And I ended up going, hey, if I can, you know, rewrite this part that I hate, you know, maybe I can find myself in the song. So I did. But for me, it was like there was a lot of self-doubt that went into this record. I think
as a whole,
just because I think being away from the scene for a while and it took our last record was in 2013, so that's essentially 5 years have passed, and you get into this headspace of like, is what I'm doing even relevant anymore, or is what I like even gonna matter?
Right,
after
and
all
resonate.
This? Yeah, and I started to feel like, you ever see Straight Outta Compton? You know, like Dr. Dre worked on this record for like 2 years, and then he just scrapped the whole thing. Like, I saw that happening in my head. I'm like, this record's never going to come out. We've been working on it forever. And I think a lot of that emotion went into the song.
Right, that anxiety.
Like, I had to like just give myself up to the process and dive into the deep end of my emotions.
Well, it really sounded like that. I mean, I feel you singing that, but it felt like a song that came from you. And I kept thinking it had to be about your relationship because you've got to have such a happy marriage and family. Like, you're in the deep end.
Oh, I'm in the deep end for sure. We've been married for almost 18 years now.
Wow. Whoa.
A lot of
and
kids.
You're so young. And... Wait, you're like 38.
Yeah.
Are you?
Wow.
Married at 20?
Yeah. I'll be 39 this year.
That is a deep end. That's very young for a guy to get married.
I'm drowning.
No.
I'm almost 40. It's over. No, I'm just kidding.
Don't say that.
No, my wife's 45, so. I think a lot of that frustration and self-doubt and everything kind of played its hand in that song. And it's how I kind of connected with it, and it made me kind of give into the process and just allow it to be. And, you know, working with a different producer and all this, all these different variables, living in Nashville now, which was another whole new change of scenery for us. So, yeah, all of that.
So how come you went away for so long? Like, you didn't really go away because we saw you the Passion?
Yeah, we were touring
right
pretty much nonstop. Even when we weren't promoting a record, we were still like getting picked up for tours, or we were doing some one-offs here and there. But so all of that like made me think that it wasn't that long since we put a record out, and I realized like, oh shit, like it's, if we start the record now, by the time we get it done, it's going to be close to 5 years. Yeah. What the hell are we doing? So there's some songs on this record that were written in 2015. So there's some old songs, like one I wrote with my wife. Is I think the oldest song on the record.
It's called
As You Are.
Right. So it is a long process.
That's the one you need to listen
to. Okay, As You Are. Yeah. Okay. And
put that in your memory banks.
Okay, we're going to listen to that as soon as we finish, right, Allie?
Yes, absolutely. Now, why did you think that this was the right time for the album to come out, like as opposed to last year or even 3 years ago?
Well, the right time would have been, in my eyes, would have been a lot sooner. But once we've got the process going, we're like, here's our producer, here's the schedule, here's what we're shooting for. Then we ended up going out on another summer tour with Nickelback, which was a huge, huge run for us, which was great because we were, you know, we got a chance to play a couple of new songs and kind of get people's attention again.
Right, get reconnected.
But that was halfway through the record. And we had already recorded like 4 or 5 tunes, and now we're like, oh, another wrench in the spokes, another setback. And then once we got off the road, his schedule was Jakir, our producer, his schedule had to, you know, he had some other acts that he was working on, and it was a whole scheduling conflict, and it just felt like one thing after another kept perpetuating the date. So, we were hoping to get it out last year, and so that didn't happen. But
now tell us about As You Are. You said you wrote it with your wife. What's that about?
So my wife, she has,
and your wife's called Deanna.
Deanna, for those who didn't know. She wanted to, or as a kid, she loved writing. She's always been obsessed with lyrics. So like she would write these poems or things down, her thoughts. And a while back, years ago, she had brought me these lyrics and was like, if you get anything from this or want to write something or whatever. And I was kind of dismissive about it.
Why?
Like, I write the songs in this house.
No.
That's a
little sexist.
It is. It's terrible. And I didn't say that, but I think I had that kind of, I think I had that kind of ego about it. Like, oh, you're stepping into my territory, you know? Yeah. And I felt like a dick.
And, good.
And no, awful. And so fast forward years later, we're living in LA and she, brought me these lyrics into the kitchen, and I was like, not gonna do it this time. Not gonna dismiss this.
Oh, good.
I'm gonna learn my lesson here, and I'm gonna read these. And I started crying, like it like affected me so hard. And I immediately had this chorus in my head, and I went to work on it, and I didn't show it to her until I was finished writing it, and she bawled, and it was a pretty special moment. So, what's it about? It's about accepting everything about someone. Mm-hmm. It's about everything.
So she brought you a beautiful love song.
She brought me these lyrics that she was dealing with, personally. And yeah, it was a pretty amazing connection.
Now, had she been was she a songwriter before, like when you met?
I don't think she views herself as a songwriter as much as she views herself as a writer. Like she has a way with words and writes these things down, and I take the pieces of the puzzle and start to put it together. And like, so it wasn't like as she wrote it on a piece of paper, that's not the song. It was like there were things about it that really started jogging my or getting my gears turning. And the lyric, "I love you as you are," was the basis of what she wrote. And so it kind of took a whole new life of its own. Yeah.
I've always been really interested in the songwriting process because I think it's just a really kind of out there concept, mm-hmm. because sometimes you're literally thrown into a room with someone you don't know and have to kind of let all your feelings out, like a therapy session. But sometimes it comes so naturally with just how you feel, and just like in a moment in time or like driving down the street, you see something that inspires you. And I think that becomes the best.
And I think this song is exactly that. Like I have a handful of songs that I feel like were given to me, mm-hmm. meaning like they fell in my lap. I didn't really have to work hard for it. And it
do you mean given to the by someone
like,
else?
Or by they the universe. Came, oh, like by it the just, universe. It just like I picked up a guitar and it was like, it wrote itself in a way. September was one of them. Home. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that tend to connect the most with the fan base and people in general. And I think this song, As You Are, is that song for this record.
Now, when you were growing up, when did you realize that you had this gift or that the songs like would come out from the universe?
Yeah.
And, like, how did that all start for you?
I think for me, it was all about singing. The songwriting kind of took place a little later and started developing over time. I wrote songs when I was a teenager, but they were terrible. some of them, you know what? I won't say terrible because I actually always felt like I had a knack for melody. So I was always a sucker for a pop melody and pop radio growing up as a kid. I was always intrigued by a catchy song, you know, whether it be Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up,
or song.
Like old time rock and roll from Bob Seger. Like I was always drawn to a good melody. So that was always the basis of my songwriting. Mm-hmm. I didn't really start paying attention to lyrics until like I became an adult. And I realized that, oh shit, these words matter, because I was into bands like Tool and you know, a lot of the grunge bands at the time where you didn't really pay attention to what they were saying. It was just, it sounded cool.
Yeah.
And then you'd read it later and go, what the fuck is this? what am I singing here? And so I think, you know, as I got married, I was forced to kind of grow up. When I got married and I'm taking on two kids that, you know, weren't mine, and they were 2 and 4, and it just kind of like forced me to grow up. I started like really paying attention to the storytelling of songwriting, like Elton John, Bernie Taupin, you know, going back and listening to all the bands and artists that actually inspired the artists that I grew up listening to. And I was like, oh yeah, kind of has to mean something in order for people to really feel a connection to it. So yeah. I think that was when it really started to make sense to me. And then writing that first record was a huge learning experience, working with other writers and helping me kind of take what I did and hone those skills in a more focused direction.
Now, but what you said that it started for you was singing. So were you like, as a kid or a teenager, did you sing a lot? Were you in the school choir?
I was not in the choir, but I did.
Choir boy.
I sang along to the radio a lot, and I just thought that I thought that I could emulate really well, but I thought most people could sing, so I didn't think it was anything special. And I remember I was a buddy of mine in high school. He was a year ahead of me. He had a guitar. He was playing in class one day, and I think he was playing like some Soundgarden, which was what I was into at the time pretty heavily. So I was intrigued, and I grew up around music my whole life. My dad played guitar, my granddad played guitar, and I just never had an interest. They played, you know, a lot of the old school country music like Merle Haggard and stuff like that. And I just was like, oh, that's cool, but it just never really grabbed me. And so now in my teens, I'm into this music and I see someone that I can relate to and they're playing the stuff that I dig, and all of a sudden there's this interest. And I went from wanting to be an actor and a comic book artist to like, maybe I want to do this. And he was playing this song. Oh, actually, we were in algebra class, and my teacher, I guess he ran out of things to do that day. He was this young guy. I actually credited him on my first record as part of the reason I'm here, because he gave us all this assignment to like write a song or a poem with whatever terms we were learning that week.
In math.
Right?
That's interesting.
That's great.
Just
that's
completely
creative.
Out amazing. Of the blue.
Yeah. Creative.
And I was like, oh shit, we need to do this for real. Like, let's do like a power ballad. And I was thinking it as a joke. And I'm like, oh, that means I'm going to have to like actually sing in front of someone. I've never done that. So he came over to my house and we started working on this song. And I started singing. He goes, dude. He like stopped playing guitar. He's like, you sound like Tracy Chapman. Like, you should totally be a singer. I'm like, I love Tracy Chapman. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that I was so uncomfortable that I was like keeping everything down here. And I was, yeah, it was like Fast Car and Eddie Vedder. I wasn't sure of myself at the time, but as far as what I was capable of doing or not doing or whatever, but I kind of got hooked and we performed it the next day in class. And next thing I know, like the teacher's like bringing us in for his next periods and his next period. And we're like doing this song in front of his class for like four or five periods. And I kind of fell in love with it. And we started a band together. Or he was in a band and I kind of came along and was another singer. They had like three singers. We were doing like covers and stuff like that. And then I ended up quitting that and starting my own band, but still using his garage to practice in, because we didn't have a garage in my house.
Garages and, are very
so
important.
Robert Nesbitt is definitely him and Mr. Schultz. Mr. Ron Schultz are like the two catalysts.
That's the math teacher. They're,
Mr. Ron Schultz, who still comes out to shows, by the way. He was a super young dude like when I was in high school.
And is he still at the high school teaching?
No, he's still a teacher, but he's in Pennsylvania now. But where he's from. And I lived in Virginia at the time. Oh, okay. But yeah, that was kind of like the moment that took my interests away from being an artist.
Like a literal artist, a cartoon artist.
I was such a, like from the time I was a little kid, that's how I identified myself. I was an artist. So it was always weird for me to think like, I got to tell people I'm a singer now and they don't know this about me and they've known me my whole life. You know, that weird like identity thing that you're like, are they going to clown on me? Are they going to, you know, choir boy, like you just said.
Right.
But I didn't do it. I did end up going into musical theater, though. I did The Wiz. I was the Scarecrow in The Wiz, and I was Smee in Peter Pan. And yeah, so that kind of like set me on a path of the stage.
And how did you go from that? How did you then end up in American Idol, which is really where you became like a household name?
It's simple. I did the same thing for almost 10 years and felt like I was going nowhere. Spinning wheels.
Musical theater.
No. Yeah. I was still playing. I was in a band. I was playing in clubs and I started in Virginia. And then when I moved back to North Carolina, when I met my wife, I kind of took a break from it for a minute. And I felt like it, like I was doing a lot of work, but there was not a lot of yield. And I was working a day job, and then I was playing.
What was your day job?
I was at the time. Well, gosh, let's see. At first, I was like a delivery guy at Rent-A-Center, actually before that, I was selling Kirby vacuums from door to door.
Oh my God!
And then you were
a vacuum cleaner salesman.
Yeah.
I didn't even know they had those anymore.
Well, they don't. But back in 2000 and 2001, that's, you know,
that
17 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
God, that's a long time.
I was five.
Oh, Allie, don't make us feel even older than we are, okay?
And officially feeling super. Not too bad, then. Not too bad. But then I worked at a car dealership as a service guy. I didn't work on cars. I was the guy that like told you how much it was going to cost to fix your car. I didn't know what I was doing.
And then playing these gigs at night.
Yeah, and it just felt like wasn't really, and this was before YouTube was huge and before you could, you know, film yourself on your phone and right. put it out there for everybody to see. So I was basically begging people to come see me. And then my wife kept saying, you know, you need to go, you're better than this. You need to like go out. This is how old I feel now. You have to go out for like Star Search or something like that.
I know Star Search.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And American Idol was around at the time, but at the time it was very I remember watching them when they were singing to tracks and there was no band on stage and it was all, you know, bubblegum pop songs and or old standards or whatever.
Yeah, they did a lot of old standards.
I was like, no way in hell I'm going to do this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And so this thing came up called Rockstar NXS, that this show that came out in 2003 or four, you remember the band NXS?
Yes.
And so they were trying to replace Michael Hutchence.
Right. Yeah. That's right. I remember that show. They were trying to find a new lead singer.
Yes. So I auditioned for that and got a private audition with the producers and all this. And I thought that was going to happen and it didn't. They ended up saying like, I actually think they did me a favor. They said something like, we love you, but I don't think this would work out for you as much as I think this would actually hurt you or something to that effect. And at the time, I was like deflated. A new season of American Idol came out a couple months later and had like Carrie Underwood and Bo Bice and Constantine Maroulis and, which was more like, oh, this is not, it's not what I do, but at the same time, it's not what I'm used to seeing, which means maybe there is room for someone like myself. And so I went out and I auditioned.
Wait, which city did you go to first?
I went to Denver, Colorado, because I was living in North Carolina and the closest location was going to be Memphis. Then Katrina happened. So they canceled the audition in Memphis because they were housing everyone in the FedEx Forum or whatever, all the people, you know, using it as a shelter. And so they canceled that audition. And I was like, well, the next one is in Denver, Colorado, and I don't know what other chance I'm going to have. So they raised money for me at my job
to fly
me out there. And
At the car dealership.
They pass around a bucket. Aww. Yeah. And which was really, really cool. And I was super grateful. And am super grateful for that. And I went and I auditioned and I got in, but they didn't. It's a weird thing because it's like three rounds of auditions before or two rounds of auditions before you got to Simon, Paula, and Randy. And I had to come back like 2 weeks later because of the whole schedule got screwed up when they canceled the other city. And then I fly back, and I do the audition there and I get in and then
was there like their second audition or your third one? Was it all in Denver?
I had to go back to Denver.
Back and forth to Denver.
Check it. Then they add a makeup city for the Memphis date. And it was in my backyard. It was in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Oh my God.
But I had already made it in. So that allowed
them to Hollywood. Yeah. You're going to Hollywood.
So they wanted to come to my house and film a whole backstory because I had already got in. So it worked out like so perfect because I could have slipped through the cracks easily in Greensboro. There were so many people they brought on the show from Greensboro that made it. Kelly Pickler, Bucky Covington. There was a few more that made it through. And I was just like, man, I could have easily just somehow been in front of a different producer that day that it wouldn't have.
Right. Who could have said, we already got all these people.
We got that already and it worked out.
Yeah. So it was just
it was the right place, the right time.
Right. It was really meant to be. Now, you know, here's the thing. You got married at 20, which I really want to hear your love story of how you all met and how you met. But I mean, talk about somebody who stood by you. Like, no wonder she wrote that song for you, because you were working, selling vacuum cleaners and stuff.
Oh, no, she reminds me every day. I liked you when you were nobody.
Well, that's like really important.
It's extremely important. I think about it all the time.
Yeah.
I see people, these young people in relationships, and I'm just like, how do you navigate through that in this day and age, in this culture?
In this Tinder life?
Oh, yeah.
Like, social media?
Like, it seems like so free and so fun. And then you're like, you don't know anything about anyone until you've been with them when they were nothing. And you've been through all the shit, the ups, the downs.
And you had a lot of downs.
Oh.
Especially when you started.
Oh, yeah.
So how did... Okay.
We had one last week.
Oh, you had one last week.
I mean, are you married?
Yes.
How long?
Oh, you don't want to know.
No, I do want to
know. Longer than you.
No, that's great, though.
Okay.
So you know that it doesn't matter. There's always a season. There's always...
Yes.
There's always a hurdle. There's always something to get through. And that's how we grow as human beings, you know?
Yeah.
And I look at those times, and they're huge growing points for both of us. And if you're able to stick through that and let each other be who they are, when they are, where they are, it's like amazing on the other side when you're able to accept that. And you know that person more than anyone else, and vice versa. And that's a pretty comforting thing too.
No, it's amazing.
And it's not like settling. It's like a real like acceptance of each other, and that's what it's really supposed to be. It's not a controlling, I need you to be this, or I wish you were this. You're not who I, you know, it's like you're here now. You're still on your journey as a human being, and so are you, and we're navigating it together, and we have kids, and we're trying not to screw them up, and which I'm sure we've done. At least a couple of them.
Oh, no. But I mean, there's definitely not enough of a celebration of long-term commitment and long-term marriage, and as opposed to, I've got to try all these different people.
Yeah.
And
And so to answer your question, like how we met, like I was 20. I'm such a relationship guy. I had just gotten over a five-year relationship when I was 20. You know what that means? I was dating someone from the time I was 15 to 20.
Oh, those are like awful years. Like if it just, you change a lot.
Yeah, no shit. Like, I didn't know who I was, and neither did she. But to that, you know, that being said, we broke up. It was like a mutual thing. And I didn't want a relationship. I was like, go play the field. I'm free. Woo! And I meet Deanna. And I'm like, shit.
How'd you meet her?
I was visiting North Carolina because I was living in Virginia at the time. And my best friend at the time, that he lived with me. We went to high school together and everything. We were visiting my family and his sister who lived in North Carolina. It was her birthday that weekend. And so we went to go visit her, and she was there, and we hit it off, and it was
at the party.
Yeah, it was this weird, like, it's hard to explain. It was like this, like, we knew each other almost, like this synergy. It was weird.
So you were at the birthday party for your sister.
Friend's sister.
Oh, friend's sister.
And we just,
and she was like a friend of sister.
Like somehow they knew each other, and it was just this weird, like, I went from that whole I'm out to like just have fun and do whatever and play the field or whatever. And next thing I know, we're like talking on the phone for hours, and I'm taking trips to North Carolina on the weekends, and cell phones had just come out. So I had a StarTAC flip phone, and I think I ran up I think it was my first thing that ever went to collections. I ran up a $1,200 cell phone bill, because turns out that's not magic, and you run out of minutes. And I was 20 and didn't know shit. And so 6 months later we were married.
Wow. And she had two kids already.
Yeah, two and four.
Right.
Yeah.
She'd already been married.
Yeah, she told me that to try to scare me away, and I thought she was just saying it.
Like you didn't really think there were kids.
No, I knew it was, but I think she thought it was going to make me like run the other way. Yeah.
That's awesome, though.
Yeah.
Most guys these days would be like, bye.
I mean, on paper, it's ridiculous. It's so stupid.
Like, yeah, 20 anyone, is so young like, you don't for anyone know to get married.
Yourself at all. But I also think a lot of my growth as a human being has happened because of all these experiences, because I don't know what I would have gotten into in my early 20s had this happened, you know, and being single and not really knowing, and it kind of lived a bit of a sheltered life growing up, you know, so I wasn't around like a lot of drugs or alcohol or anything like that. Well, maybe alcohol, but so I was just kind of like that whole scene, like getting into this business was very, very new to me. Yeah. And had I not had that anchor, I'm not sure what I would have gotten into. But.
Well, and you had, going back to American Idol just briefly.
It's feeling like therapy.
You had a really, yeah, exactly. Tell me your feelings.
Okay.
But you had a great season filled with people who are in the business today.
It was the best.
Catherine McPhee, Kelly Pickler, Bucky, like you said,
Elliot
Mandisa.
Yamin, Ace Young.
Yeah.
Who else? Gosh.
I mean, Taylor Hicks.
Taylor Hicks. they're all actually, you know, we all got along great. And it was all like a fun thing. Yeah, it was really cool.
Do you feel like you're part of that? Like, is there an American Idol connection to people? Do you people keep in touch?
I feel like I would go to a reunion of that before my high school reunion.
Okay.
Because I feel like I've had more contact with that group of people in the last 20 years than I ever did with people I went to high school with.
Do you ever hear from Simon or keep in touch with him?
No, I don't. We did briefly there for a minute, but he probably blocked me or something, changed his number. I don't know. It's funny because we never really got a chance to hang much. You see the judges when the people on TV see them.
Wow.
So like when we walk out on stage and they're in their seats, that's when we saw them too. Every now and then we'd see them passing through the dressing rooms, whatever, but they were on a different level of dressing rooms. So we were isolated from them. Maybe for good reason, you know. Obviously, you know, there was a lot of stuff that happened in the past that from judges being too close to contestants. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that had something to do with it. But every now and then I'd probably had more contact with Randy on a day-to-day basis, not just in passing. Like, he was always super personable and it was always cool to catch up with. So I've probably caught up with him and Ryan more than anyone. Ryan, because he's like everywhere I go, like TV shows, everywhere. Radio. Like.
He is everywhere. But it's interesting because that's what Maddie Poppy said too. So Maddie was the winner, obviously, of the new season. And she said the same thing. She was like, you see them on, you know, when you see them, because we were like, oh, did they mentor you? She was like, no, like they just, whatever they said to me, you saw.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's interesting because you have this whole idea, I guess, of like this mentorship, but it's like, no, they're judging you based on that performance and that's what you
get. Sometimes they, you know, at the end of the episodes, they would come up to the stage and we'd shoot the shit and they would say stuff to us personally, but it was always super brief and then, all right, gotta go.
Right.
Well, what
I do wonder though, and is that after the show's over, like, if they're not really giving you mentorship, are there producers that do? Like, how do you get connections or for the next step or suggestions for the next step?
They have people that, the producers sometimes chime in if they think that you're picking a song that just is going to go over like a fart in church or something. You know, like, and they're just
expression.
Like, nobody knows this song. Why would you pick this? And which happened to me quite a bit. And there were times where I just threw the finger up and said, I'm doing this song. Because it wasn't about like whether it was a memorable tune. It was like, if I was going to make a record, this is the type of song I would do. So at least I want it to, I want people to know exactly what I'm about musically. So at least it's not like I saw him do this, but his record is so vastly different. I wanted people to know, like, this is the kind of thing that I do. And so a lot of times I was picking songs that nobody knew, like the Queen song, Innuendo. I didn't even know that song until I heard it. But I liked, you know, I thought I could do it well. And I remember Simon coming up to me and he said, "Why would you pick this song? This song is terrible. You missed a great opportunity." This was after I sang it, like on the stage, he like came up and was like, "You should have done like Under Pressure or something that everybody knows." And because it was Queen Week. And I was like, "Yeah, but we just did that in the montage, like the group thing." He goes, "It doesn't matter. You could have had a moment." I was like, "I think I did." And it was a great week for me. So not necessarily wrong. I mean, he is right. I would have probably gotten way more attention if it was a song that everybody knew and it was a very classic hit. But I wasn't even thinking on those levels. I was thinking like, I like this. Yeah, it was as simple as like, it. I like this. I'm going to do it.
Well, you know. The reason I was asking about like at the end of the show for people who are like finalists or how to take their how do they get know what to do to take their careers to the next level?
Yeah.
Because even on a show,
I didn't even get to that point. So there are people that choose songs or give you they give you parameters like okay, so it's 50s week. Here's all the cleared songs, like all the songs that publishing has cleared, and you're not going to have a problem singing this. Like there's certain artists that won't clear the songs. Like I think at the time we couldn't do any Elton John, which really upset me because I wanted to do some Elton John so bad. But I remember 50s week and I was like, so this is a bit of my process. Like, okay, I don't know shit about the 50s, but I see Johnny Cash. I'm like, okay, I like Johnny Cash, but I don't do country and I'm not going to do Johnny Cash's version of Walk the Line, but my favorite band had a version of it and that was my loophole. So I would always like find like how to make this relate to what I do. Like I found their version of Walk the Line and then I did that. Right. And that,
but at the end of the like when you're leaving the show, mm-hmm. do they give you, hey, here's connections to X producers?
Yeah, what happened when you got voted off?
I had meetings with pretty much every record label. I mean, I don't know if that happened for, I don't know, whatever.
Did they reach out to you?
Management, so 19 Entertainment chose to manage me. Like they have the right or right of refusal, so to speak, to pick you up and shop you around to different labels or whatever. And they picked me up immediately. So,
awesome.
I was fortunate enough to have people in my corner out the gate. I'm not so sure that's the case for everyone. I think if they don't have an interest, then it's like.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yikes.
Thrown to the wolves.
Right.
And I mean, essentially I was too, really. I mean, you have people that introduce you and get you the connections and then you still have to do the work.
Right.
Yeah.
The reason I ask that is just that I feel like a lot of the shows get criticized, like American Idol, a lot of you went on to have big careers, but then The Voice, like people are, well, what happened to the winners? What happened to the people?
Yeah.
And so there seems to be different shows have different results in terms of their talent.
Honestly, I think it's probably more to do with the oversaturation of just music. There's so many ways to get music out there now that there are more artists coming out on Friday than used to come out in an entire year. You know what I mean? Like anyone can get their music out there now. So I think people's attention span is so spread thin that a lot of artists don't get the attention that they deserve because there's so much out there to listen to. And it's like, oh, next song. Oh, I don't know if I like this. Oh, next artist. Oh, there's a new artist. Oh, who the shit is this? You know, it's like every week it's like 50 different people on Spotify and you don't know where to look. There's too much. Well, with that being said, you know, there are still a lot of artists that do rise to the top.
Yeah. Well, listen, for everybody who wants to see you, where do they find all your tour information?
DaughtryOfficial.com. You can follow us on Instagram at Daughtry. You can follow me personally on Instagram at Chris Daughtry. There's a lot of Daughtry going on. It's really redundant. But yeah, all the tour information is updated regularly on our website, and hopefully we'll catch you out there on the road.
Yeah, so everybody, catch Chris and Daughtry on the road, and get his album, Cage to Rattle, and make sure you, aside from the singles I mentioned before, it's As You Are.
Yes.
As You Are.
Yes.
Love it.
Hit the love song.
Yes,
the love song.
That is
all about.
That is all the feelings.
Okay, all the feelings. Well, I know what I'm playing next.
Oh, yes.
Gosh.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Come see us again.
Absolutely.
Okay, bye.